Welcome to the Business of Behavior podcast, hosted by Dr. Becca Tagg. We support clinicians who have been bitten by the entrepreneurial bug, looking to strengthen their practice to better serve their clients, employees, and themselves.
Hello, and welcome to the Business of Behavior podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Becca Tagg, and this is session 79. Today is going to be a part two or a return conversation with Johanna Eddy. She is wonderful, and she's here to share some of her knowledge and expertise as an accountant, and particularly an accountant that has worked with a variety of ABA organizations. She's going to help talk to us a bit about planning for the end of the year or the end of the fiscal year. Of course, we're assuming that the fiscal year coincides with our calendar year, which it might for some organizations, and for others it might not. So this might be something that you want to revisit at the end of your fiscal year. Johanna has a bachelor's degree in business administration from Florida Atlantic University and a master's degree in accounting from the University of Notre Dame. Her master's degree concentrated on financial reporting and assurance. When she was in college, she worked full-time in the healthcare industry, where she obtained a thorough understanding of the revenue cycles and the roles insurance companies play. She spent the first 5 years of her professional career auditing the financial statements of large public corporations. Her job was to ensure their financial statements were free from material errors and that they had sound internal controls. After identifying the large need for an accountant that understood the ABA industry, she opened her own business. She concentrates on consulting and advising ABA companies on all financial aspects of their business. She also sits on the council of the Florida Institute of Certified Public Accountants, where they influence legislation and the continuing education requirements of CPAs in the state. Before we get into the interview, I want to remind everyone that Johanna has been on the podcast before, and so I'll put a link to the original interview in the show notes. And again, just a huge thank you to her and really everyone who chooses to donate their time and knowledge and expertise in different areas here on the Business of Behavior podcast. Now, let's get to the interview. Welcome, Johanna. I so appreciate you taking time to join me here on the Business of Behavior podcast again, taking time out of your day. And as we are coming into the end of 2019, it sounds like you've got some great suggestions about how we can be as prepared as possible for the end of the year, and then some hints or suggestions to help us be most successful next year. Is that right?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Beckham. So it's a pleasure to be here again with you.
Perfect. Wonderful. Well, why don't we jump right in? And I also, actually, I always do that. I say, let's do this, and then I keep talking. So I know, or I think, for a lot of people talking about financials and the accounting or financial part of their business or life even can bring up a lot of stuff for us. And so I want everyone to take a couple minutes and just take a deep breath. And remember, you don't have to know everything that Johanna knows, right? That's why we tag in these other professionals. So take a deep breath and remember that you're going to listen to what she's suggesting so that we can be as successful as possible. It might be uncomfortable at times because it's not what we know. And that's okay, because she knows it, or your accountant knows it, or your CPA knows it. And so to kind of lean into that temporary discomfort, because on the other side of that is greater organizational financial wellness. Okay, now take it away.
Okay, great. So I thought that we'd start off by discussing from a financial perspective what we should be doing in year-end and year-end planning. So the most important thing from a financial perspective to have ready is that your books are in order, right? And what do I mean by books are in order? That you have your essential financial statements prepared in order to go and do your company's tax return and your state filings and anything that you might need them for. Now, financial statements, people don't like that word either, right? So what do I mean when I say financial statements? I mean, you want to have a profit and loss statement. Now, This one's easier to understand, right? It lists your revenue, the sources of income, and then it lists your expenses, and it gets you down to a number, which some of us might call profit, we call net income, net loss, depending on where you stand. So that one's the easiest one to understand. The other one that you usually need is a balance sheet, which is like alien talk. Nobody likes a balance sheet. And a balance sheet really, in essence, it just lists three things. Your assets, and assets are anything that are of value to your company at a future point. So cash in the bank, an asset, right? If you own property, an asset. And so anything that could be of value to your company later. It'll then list liabilities, which is just anybody you owe money to, essentially. And then it'll have your equity, which is basically just all the owner's investment increased by the revenue generated, decreased by losses, and decreased by distribution payment of those owners. Okay. So if you have a bookkeeper, they're probably going to produce these financial statements for you. But if you're just starting out and you don't have one yet, so you're doing it solo, you're really going to want to consider having a review done before year end, right? And why do I say before year end? Because CPAs tend to rise prices during high demand, which is during the tax season. Their time is limited because they're doing these tax returns. They have a heavy demand and prices go up. They also have less time, so it's going to take longer for you to get your financial statements, right? Which might not mean much, but let's say you have kids going to college and you want to apply for the FAFSA. If you have to extend your tax return, now you're not going to have it available to give them. If you're hoping to buy a home, they're going to ask you for your tax returns. And if you went into extension, you're also not going to have them to give them. So it's always better to have a review done before your needs. So we're still mid-November, you still, and usually CPAs have slow time, November, December, so it'll be easy to get one to do it, just at least a very high-level review to let you know if it looks okay.
Let me interrupt because I love all that information. I want to be sure we unpack enough. What does that mean? What is a review? How would one go about getting that? Like, who would they call and what would they say? And kind of what might they need to prepare in order for a review?
So you'll call a CPA or sometimes tax preparers do it too. And you'll say that you just need a review of your year annual financial statements. You've been doing the bookkeeping yourself. And you want just a professional to go over because you're not a professional, you don't know if maybe you need some mistakes. So I'll share with you some common mistakes I observe when I'm reviewing. Sometimes when you're doing bookkeeping yourself, all deposits that came into the bank go to revenue. Right now, this might not be true. You might have given your company money to start it off, right? You might have contributed some cash in the bank account to help fund it the first month, a few months. You might have taken a loan, a family member might have given you some money. That's not revenue. And if you improperly classify it to revenue, you're going to pay taxes on money that's not subject to tax, right? When an owner gives money to its company, that's not subject to tax. When you take a loan and you give that money to your company, you're not subject to tax. First, you want to make sure that you're not paying more tax than you have to. Another big mistake I see people do their bookkeeping themselves is that they don't reconcile the bank. Now, almost everybody uses QuickBooks, and you'll see, like it's evidence of bank reconciliation. People are like, no, what is this? I'm not touching it. But it's not as complicated as it seems, but it is complicated. You can just get somebody to do it too. You can hire a CPA or bookkeeper, call them, tell them you've done the bookkeeping, but you don't understand the reconcile function. They can do it for you. Why is the reconcile function important? Because it's the only thing that's going to tell you if you missed some expenses or you missed some revenue. If you don't reconcile against the bank records, you could have missed transactions. And this happens all the time. QuickBooks has glitches. It doesn't import correctly. It has a limit on the amount it could import. So if when you did the import, you had, let's say, 6 months, it might have only picked up 3 months. So this is a very important step. And lots of them all get companies that didn't even account for transactions on a company credit card. They didn't even put that into the QuickBooks. So those were lots of expenses that they would have lost if a third party had come in to review before we prepared those financials.
Perfect. So just to make sure I understand, so reconciliation, when we're talking about our QuickBooks or whatever system you're using really means to check to be sure that what's in QuickBooks matches what's happening in your actual bank account. Is that a fair kind of break? I'm sure it's oversimplified, and we want to keep it simple so that it feels less overwhelming. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Dr. Beck. Perfect. So we're just comparing the two basically. So that's from the financial statement perspective. Another important issue is if you have employees and contractors, right? You need to first understand that, make sure your payroll provider has everything they're going to need to do year end. They're going to have to file W-2, Security Administration, with the IRS, and they have everything in order, right? If you had an employee that, let's say, quit in June, you need to make sure you have a good forwarding address to send them their W-2. So you want to make sure that you contacted them or you asked them before they left, you know, to keep them in the loop, to make sure they got their W-2. Then if you have contractors, right? And a contractor isn't just the speech therapist that you brought in for a consult, right? A contractor is anybody you paid money to. So you want to review all your vendors, we call them, which is basically a person that your company paid money to, and see who you paid $600 or more to. Because if you did, you might be required to issue a 1099 form.
So I want to interrupt real quick just to break down vendors a little bit, because I think that this is such a great conversation and you're spot on. When people hear contractor, they think it's the big like employee or contractor debate about BCBAs or RBTs. But really, so for us, an example would be we have a cleaning company that comes in and cleans our clinic, like does a deep clean, and we pay them weekly. We pay them over $600 a year, and so we have to produce a 1099, or not we, our CPA, our financial team produces a 1099 for them, because we have to show that money went to somebody and they have to pay taxes on that income. And so it's really, really important that this is that if you're, you know, if it's I mean, your CPA will guide you, but I know that something that comes to my mind is we've had the interior of our clinic painted, and the people that did that work, it was over 600. So we had to produce a 1099 for them. Our cleaning company, we've got some IT work, and those are pretty consistent subcontractors or contractors that we pay that end up getting a 1099 at the end of the year. So what Johanna is saying is we're not just talking about like that speech pathologist or somebody that you're bringing in clinically. It's really anyone who's doing work on your company. Is that right, Johanna?
Yes, that's exactly right. It's anybody you paid money to on behalf of your company. Even the rent, usually you need to check that you should the landlord at 1099. That's a common one people don't understand, but that's a particular one that gets overseen a lot. So the way that you determine whether you have issued the 1099 is by reviewing the W-9 form. So you need to, it's required at the inception of the relationship. Let's say Dr. Becca tells me she wants me to do some work. She needs to ask me to fill out a W-9. So Dr. Becca can have to file at the inception of our relationship. Now, if you haven't done it, you want to get these as soon as possible, especially like Dr. Becker says, maybe some people don't want to report the money for taxes. And it's not going to be on them. It's going to be on you, because the IRS holds the party who engaged the relationship who paid the money responsible. So it is true some people don't require a 1099. For example, if the person you paid was a company organized as an S corp, not required, right? But you can't just take their word for it. You need the W-9, and you want to give it to your CPA and have them review it and say whether they need it, okay? And it's important to note that you need to understand who's responsible for this. Now, Dr. Becker says her CPA does it, but it's not. You need to discuss with your CPA. Are you going to do this for me? Because if you're just paying them, let's say, for bookkeeping, that's usually not included in that fee, right? They might get the numbers for you, but the actual filing might be an extra expense. You want to discuss who's responsible, is it going to cost me, how much is it going to cost?
And I should be clear, so our CPA guides us in everything. She does not prepare, and it's actually a team of CPAs, so they do not prepare the 1099. It goes through ADP, who's currently our payroll people. They produce it at the end of the year, but we have to provide them the information, and I depend on our CPA to tell me who need, you know, who we have to get a W-9 for and what information has to go to who. So that's exactly right. We have to talk about that at the beginning or every time we have a new ongoing relationship. So when some of you guys know that last year our clinic was destroyed in Hurricane Florence, and so we had to move into a new space and it needed a lot of work to be ready, like painting and capping some sinks. And so every time we have work done, I call Jeanette is our CPA, and I say, Jeanette, we're going to have this done. This is who's doing it. Do we need a W-9? What do we need to do? And then she guides us at that time. So it's not just waiting till the end of the year and then saying, so by the way, what should I have done? And if you're in that place, don't freak out. It's okay. We can always come back from it. But you've got to have those open conversations with who's guiding you financially about what you might need.
Yeah. And so the important thing to note is that all the 10 next W-2s are due by January 31st. So you don't want to wait a lot of time to get everything organized, because they only really give you a month to prepare it. And so with payroll, it's usually a bit easier. Payroll is usually encompassed the preparation of W-2, but not always. Like on those self-service sites, like Gusto, QuickBooks, you need to check your package. Does your package include the final? If your current package makes you prepare the quarterly 941 to send them, the likelihood that they do the W-2s is low. So you're going to need to find out. So it's important to find out who's responsible for what are you responsible for, and get it organized.
That's another part that makes it important to get a correct address for employees or employees who may have left, because I know for us, when we have to order another W-2, then we incur a fee and sometimes a little work on the, and it's, I think it's a pretty high number or amount for those reprints. And so a little work on the front end can save you some money. So double checking for employees who have left that we have an accurate forwarding address or that they're still where they are can be helpful just to save some money and aggravation, right? Because if somebody doesn't get their W-2 at the end of the year and then they're upset and then you're trying to hurry and get stuff ordered very quickly, you know, that can save you some headaches.
Yeah. Okay, so now we can move to a tax perspective. So from a tax perspective, this kind of flows very good from the first one we were talking about, the bookkeeping. It's important that you're aware that the tax preparer has no requirement to audit or review the financial statements you have given him or her. You are the one who's going to be liable. If something is wrong, you're not going to be able to go back to the preparer because they have no requirement to review or audit the work. So you want to make sure your taxpayer is somebody who's qualified. And we talked about this in the last cash flow podcast we did. A lot of anybody could be a tax preparer, right? You don't have to have, besides passing a fingerprint test, that is the only thing. If you never committed a crime, you can be a tax preparer with no formal education or training on the tax system. So you want to make sure that the person you're dealing with, you know, it has the skills necessary to perform the work. So if you did your own bookkeeping right, and you didn't go to get a review, you want to be careful at the point you hand it over, because you're going to be responsible. And that's why getting that review, doing that extra step, you know, it's going to be worth whatever it costs, because it's just going to give you the peace of mind that the numbers you gave were reliable. A general rule, you know, for expenses, right? A lot of times people don't understand what's deductible or what's not. The IRS says if it's an ordinary and necessary expense to run your business, then it's going to be deductible. Now, they say that, but there is 1,000,003 exceptions that they'll post. And then what I believe to be ordinary and reasonable might not be what the IRS sees ordinary and reasonable, right? So you'll want to look at everything, make sure it's a legitimate business expense. The IRS has ratios, right? Their computer systems are sophisticated. They have ratios that they set saying in this type of industry, we expect that the meals expense be around this percentage of revenue or whatever it may be. And they run the numbers, and that's how they identify people for audits, people who are red flags, because their ratios are not quite in line with the industry. Now, that being said, this is another important step when you communicate to your tax preparer what type of business you have, because they might not understand the industry, and they might put in a code that's not really an industry that has a lot of things in common with the ABA, and then your ratios are going to be out of whack. So make sure to have that discussion. Look, this is what my company does. There's no IRS code for EB. Okay. There isn't one yet. So you're going to want to discuss, explain to them so they can find a similar code.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to, you know, make sure you're not abusing any expense. It's something that we see a lot of like meals, especially in your industry. You're not whining and dining clients to close a sale, right? You're performing very ethical service where you're not, you know, commonly purchasing or giving things to clients, right? Because of your ethical boundaries. So they're not going to expect that the meals be huge, you know, maybe for team meetings and trainings, things like that. Yeah, there will be business meetings. You might go out to coffee with your CPA, with your attorney, and that's perfectly fine, but just make sure you're not abusing the system, because that's where you can get into trouble. So another important topic about taxes is, especially if you're a new company, you're a new ABA company, right? You're entity form, it's always entity form. Say, are you an LLC, or are you an S-Corp, or are you a partnership or sole proprietorship, right? These words you pick when you form your company. And a lot of times there's not even a lot of thought, you know, like, oh, I picked an LLC because everybody's an LLC or whatever it might be, right? But if you're essentially any entity besides a C-Corp, so any entity besides a C-Corp, that means that you're a flow-through entity. And what that means is that your company doesn't pay tax. You pay tax. The owners of the company pay the tax on a personal return. So you have to analyze how much income your company's made and split it between the owners and the percentage that they own. So let's pretend for easy that it's one person, you own 100%. The company made $50,000 net income. That's going to flow through to your personal return, and you are responsible for paying tax on it. Now, the IRS does not want you to pay taxes when you file the return. You're required to send estimated quarterly payments, which means every 3 months you sat down and said, oh, this is what my company made. I'm on this tax bracket. I'm going to send a payment for this much. Now, obviously, it does get a little complex based on your situation. We all know that the calculation of taxes is that easy. So you can engage your CPA to do a quarterly tax estimate. I do it for a lot of clients. They call me, go through the books, and I advise them you need to send this much money.
Yeah, I want to stop there because I think that's really important. So for us, at least the end of each year, our CPA also gives us our estimated taxes for next year. We get this sort of link that has this little like third sheet of paper that I cut. And then it says, you know, four times throughout the year, I have to send X amount of money that's estimated tax. And so I'm paying it throughout the year. Because they don't want it all at the end of the year from a business. And then sometimes we still owe more, sometimes we owe less. Like she sort of, I hate to say, fixes it. I know it's more complex than that. It also, I don't know what she does. She makes sense of the numbers. And then we either pay money or we don't. And then if we overpaid, then that gets applied to the taxes for the next year. If we underpaid, then we have to pay more. But we're making payments on our taxes for the business multiple times throughout the year.
Yeah, that's good. And so all the estimated payments are due by January 15, 2020. So you need to have paid all your tax by January 15th of this year. So if you haven't sat down and done a calculation, especially if you're a new company, you're going to want to do that, and you're going to want to send a payment. Why? Because if you owe money, the IRS charges interest and penalty. They wanted their money when you earned it because they need their money.
So let me also say that again. So the IRS is going to get their money. I mean, that's going to happen. So, and if you don't pay it when it's due, they're going to say, well, it's accumulated this amount of interest. So you should have paid this in April. You're paying it past whatever time. There's interest accrued on that. So we want what you owed, the interest, and then maybe there's penalties, which my guess is penalties is more money, like a fine that goes along with that. So it's a lot of money to pay. And it's a lot more if you don't pay it when it's due. So this is one of those things that putting your head in the sand and pretending like it's not happening or putting it off is really going to cost you a lot more money in the long run. And it's probably going to shave minutes or days off of your life in the stress, because it's very stressful to feel like you owe the IRS money or that they're coming after you. Or, I mean, it can be a very anxiety provoking situation. So when your CPA gives you those estimated taxes, pay it. If you are managing your books yourself, reach out to a CPA to create some of those estimated taxes for the next year so that you can not freak out and so that you can be paying it as early as possible.
Yeah, that's perfect. And so if the way to avoid the penalties and interest is if you owe, you have to owe less than $1,000. So let's say you owe $900, you're not going to get penalties and interest. They waive that. Another safe harbor that they do is that they allow you, as long as you paid 100% of the prior year's tax, then you won't get penalties and interest. So let's say you get to the end of the year, you couldn't hire a CPA, you don't know how much you owe. To be safe, pull your last year's tax return, okay, your personal tax return. You're going to look at the total tax. Now, not the amount they made you pay when you filed, because that was just a balance. And if you got a refund, it doesn't mean that you didn't pay taxes. It means that you paid too much, right? You're going to want to look at the line that says total tax due. And you're going to make sure that you paid at least that amount this year. And you didn't send a payment for that amount, so you can have your safe harbor and at least avoid the penalties and interest, even though you might owe some more money. So if this doesn't go well, or you do a calculation, you're coming up with a large tax bill, right? What are your options, right? The IRS offers two different types of payment plans. They've got a short-term plan and a long-term plan. Short-term is if you're able to pay the whole amount within 120 days. And this plan is more favorable because they don't charge application fees and processing fees. They will charge interest within the 120 days until it's paid off, but at least you don't have those startup fees. Now, if you need a long-term plan, because let's say you can't pay it within 120 days, you don't anticipate having enough money, then they do charge application fees and processing fees as well if you include interest, and they set you up on monthly payments.
Let's review that, because I think that's important too. So let's say things get away from you or something happens and you have a large amount due. I think you called it a tax bill, right?
Yeah.
And there's two options. Notice that in those two options, there is not a third option that says don't pay it, that says pretend like it's not happening. You have to address this head on. It's going to be uncomfortable and you've got to do it. You have two choices. There's a short-term payment plan, which is 120 days or less. Sounds like you do pay interest on that, but there's not application fees or additional fees on that. And then if it's going to take you longer than 120 days, so my guess is 120 days or longer to pay that tax bill, you're going to pay interest and you have to apply for that option. And there's an application fee and likely some other fees associated. Is that right,
yeah.
Johanna?
Yeah, that's perfect. And so you can apply for these on the IRS's website. It is very user friendly. So once you get the bill, you can go on there and you can apply for the short term and the long term based on your situation. So for the long term plan, you can apply for it online if you owe $50,000 or less. For the short term, you can owe up to $100,000. You're going to pay within 120 days and they'll let you apply online. If it's longer than that, then you need to call the IRS to work out a plan. So it's very important. Go ahead, Doc.
I was going to say, so I know that we're talking about businesses here and we were talking about contractors. And so I want to just take a moment to touch base because I'm not entirely sure because we don't have contractors like that are clinicians and I've never been one in this capacity. So when we're talking about all this, this also applies to those clinicians who are working as 1099 contractors, right? So if you have not been paying because as a 1099, you are essentially your own business. So if you are a 1099 contractor and have not been paying quarterly taxes or those estimated taxes, this could apply to you as well. Is that right? Like not just a business. This is including sole proprietors or like solopreneurs. This you have to view, or I would encourage you to view yourself as a business because you're operating as such if you're not an employee. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's completely accurate. If you're paid as a contractor, this is just as much of a worry to you as any business owner because you are in business as far as the IRS is concerned. So it's a very serious matter if you owe money to the IRS. You can't avoid it, like Dr. said, you can't put it on the side, right? That in 2018, they passed a law granting the IRS permission to block the issuance or renewal of your passport if you owe them money. They can keep you in the country and not allow you to travel. So it's very serious. So you don't want to put it to the side. So that was my last bit on the tax plan. Everyone's scared enough. We're going to make sure.
Well, I think it's important, right? Avoiding punishment, right? So sometimes as behavior analysts, we know we either want to escape or avoid things that are uncomfortable. And so in that moment, it may feel good, right? I have avoided this punishment. I've avoided discomfort. The pisser is that in this moment, I've avoided it, but it's actually going to be worse long term if I don't handle it now. And so it's really important. You don't have to love accounting, right? In the same way that You know, you don't have to love some of the stuff that maybe I do clinically. That's okay, because you can tag me in to do that clinical stuff. And in this situation, we can tag in Johanna and her colleagues to do the stuff that we don't know or that we're not excited about, because that's what they do well. And because they do it well, we can focus on the stuff that we do well. It's really an organization must be financially well and healthy to operate. And only when it's operating well, can we help the kids and families we want to help. It's so, so important. And so again, Johanna, I really appreciate that you have taken time now and previously to kind of share all this information, because I think these are areas when people, or where people don't feel confident or competent, and then we want to avoid that, but we end up making it a bigger mess for ourselves and for you, right? Because then we call Johanna and we say, oh my gosh, I haven't done what I needed to do and now I don't know what to do. So I appreciate that. Okay, yeah. Next.
Okay, so now the third perspective we're going to discuss, right, is from specific to the ABA industry, operating the ABA industry, how do you want to get ready for next year? Well, especially if this is your first year, you might not have gone through this, but other firm companies that are more seasoned, they might be well aware. But when January rolls around, we tend to see cash flow problems, right? And why do we see them? Generally, in December, a lot of you have less activity, right? We have a lot of kiddos on vacation. We have cash sessions on holidays. We have therapists going on holiday. So they're canceling sessions. So, and since we deal with the insurance payers, the December money we're seeing towards January, February. And there will be less money coming in those months because of the lower activity due to the holidays and year end. So that's one constraint to the cash flow. The other big one is the insurance plans reset. So when they reset at year end, now we have, towards year end, you probably had a lot of your clients that met their out-of-pocket max. You're getting 100% payment from insurance companies. You're not worrying about the co-pays but the deductible. But then we turn to January, now everyone has deductibles. They might have different co-pays. They might have changed insurance plans, and now they have new benefits, and all of that really affects the cash flow if you're not ready for it. So what I suggest is already towards the year, start talking to the parents. You know, a lot of times they might have already picked their plan in the marketplace or from their employer. They know it's the same plan and gone through it, right? To gather that information. And the first weeks of January, what if somebody solely dedicated to calling eligibility benefit checks? Even if it's a kid that didn't change plans, the benefits could have changed. Okay, and sometimes they think that things didn't change, but they did. In fact, the company, their employer might have changed the plan a bit. So you want to get somebody to call and expect long hold times, expect the insurance company to tell you that they haven't loaded their system and they don't know the benefits yet, so you have to call back next week. But have somebody dedicated to doing that to get these benefits checked, and then communicate with your clients. Say, hey, you know, verified benefits, looks like your deductible reset is $5,000. We're going to bill you at the contracted rates until you've met it, and then we'll change, it's going to change your 10% co-insurance or whatever it may be, right? So have that plan in place because it's essential. If you anticipate having cash flow issues, maybe you had a very low December, you want to look at your savings. You have enough in savings to get you through January, February, March. If not, I would suggest trying to at least apply for a credit line in a bank. Most big banks will issue credit lines to young companies as long as the company's owners have reliable credit history. So that's another option. So you want to look at your savings.
Can you talk about what is a credit line? What does that mean for people that might be listening?
So a credit line is kind of like a credit card, except you don't really have a card, right? The bank will approve you for, let's say, $10,000. And that means that you can draw from the bank. You go in and take out up to $10,000. And you put it back as you can. And the less you draw, you only accrue interest on the amount drawn. So you can get a credit line for $10,000, like a credit card. You're not paying interest until you use it. Once you go and use it because you need it to make payroll, whatever it might be, or pay the rent, then you'll accrue interest on that balance until it's paid off.
Perfect. Thank you.
So it's good for short-term planning, something like we're describing now, where we're anticipating 3 months of slow cash flow. So that's my biggest advice from the industry viewpoint. Next, I have some 2020 financial planning tips.
Great. I think that's fantastic.
Okay. So you want to think about what your plans are for 2020 as a business, right? Maybe you're predominantly home-based and you think this is the year I'm going to open up a clinic. Maybe you have a clinic and you think this is the year I do a second location. Maybe you want to offer a different revenue stream where you want to bring a speech therapist, OT, whatever it may be. What are your goals and your plans for this year? And you want to cost out your whole project. You want to really put, the more planning, the better. So you want to see what is it going to cost. Consider everything that's involved in it, right? And then if it is opening a new space, you want to look at it in a certain area. You want to look at what the rent's going per square feet. You want to know how many square feet you're going to make it, and what supplies you're going to need, what furniture, all that. And you can cost it out. If you need help budgeting or forecasting, you can seek the help of a professional, right? You get a CPA. I know we do it here. I know several others do it. To forecast how much money you're going to need, and then you want to determine how you're going to finance it, right? Do I have the money in savings? Do I not? Do I need a conventional loan, right? A credit line we don't really recommend for long-term projects because the interest is accruing on those. You're more likely to get like a long-term loan instead of a project like that. And then you want to look into the requirements, like what are the banks going to ask for this conventional loan? A lot of times they might request that the financial statements be on an accrual basis, which is different than cash based, right? Which is what a lot of small companies or startup companies have their books on. So what does cash basis mean? It means that revenue is revenue when you get the money in the bank, right? What does accrual mean? Revenue is revenue when you earn the money. I saw the kid for 10 hours this week. I earned those 10 hours regardless of the fact it's going to take me 4 to 6 weeks to collect. It is this month's revenue, not next month's revenue, cash, right? Accrual basis is the accrual price basis, the only way that finance people really analyze it. Why? Because if you have a cash basis, so let's say the money comes into the bank today is from 4 weeks ago, but the expenses you paid this month's rent and the employees paid this month, those expenses are for this month, not for the month that you made that money. So you're mismatching expenses to revenue, thus creating an inaccurate net income or net loss figure. And that's why a lot of them rely on that. They've been 2 years or so on cash basis. Then they're getting to a point where it's more difficult for them to analyze their company. We suggest accrual accounting. A lot of times they get a little bit scared. They're like, oh no, but I don't want to be accrual for tax because I don't want to pay taxes on the money I didn't get yet, at year end. And that's perfectly okay. You can remain cash basis for tax basis. And just have your books on a full basis for you as an owner to analyze your business. So
which is great. So you're looking at the difference between sort of the way you're analyzing the data. So whether it's cash-based or accrual-based, and that can be different than the way you're classified for tax purposes as either cash or accrual. Is that right?
Yeah. So okay. You'll save cash to benefit yourself from a tax basis and switch to accrual because it's going to help you as a business owner. Because it's really looking at cash basis financial things doesn't really help. It's like looking at bad data because you're not matching up. You also want to look at your financial things. How are they current? Like if you have a bookkeeper or an accountant doing it, how is it currently being broken up? Does it help you at all or not? Because it should help you. You should be able to look at these and make a decision for your business. And if they don't, then they're really kind of useless until you're a tax return. And you don't want to pay for something that's meant to have a bigger purpose and just use it for the minimum.
Which is great. So we're only as good as the data. And that is not just us as behavior analysts, that's as accountants, psychologists. And I know for me, one of the things that I look at is the different buckets that money's going into. So when I look quarterly or even monthly, depending on the month, at how much, so one of the areas where I tend to spend too much or a higher ratio than is likely expected as per my accountant's report is activities that we do for team building for staff. So we do a lot of lunch that we cater for a lot of our trainings, for a lot of our groups. We do outings together. And so I need to be able to look and see what percentage or what ratio I'm spending in these different areas so that I can make the decision either, yes, that's working and I want to keep doing it, or no, I need to scale that back. Another place where I have to watch my spending is on therapy supplies. So like purchasing new toys and games and books, I tend to go a little nuts in that area. And so by having our bookkeeper who, it is a bookkeeper that does our monthly books, who's overseen by a CPA and they're all in the same organization. And so I can log in and kind of look at those reports and I can sometimes I say, holy crap, Becca, you spent how much on Amazon Prime for like materials, and then I have to rein it in the next month. Yeah. But if I didn't have that accurate data, I wouldn't know that. And I got to know where the money is going. And that's also where it's really important to have open communication with your financial team, because if they just keep seeing Amazon, because you can buy everything from Amazon. So I'll start getting emails from our bookkeeper who says, okay, Beck, I saw 5 transactions from Amazon in these amounts. What did you purchase? So if I bought iPads, let's say from Amazon, that's going to be classified in one way, versus if I bought puzzles and silly putty, that's going to be classified in a different way, versus if I bought Velcro dots and laminating paper, that's going to go under office supplies. So having those, really it's creating operational definitions for your different spending categories so that you have that good data like Johan is talking about, that you can really look at where your money is going or where it went and decide if that's where you want it to continue to go, I think is helpful.
And I love that you brought up the classification thing, because a lot of times I get people and the bookkeepers just lumping everything into one category. What good is that going to do us? You need to discuss with your bookkeeper how, like, you know, this type of, especially if you're not familiar with your industry, right? These type of expenses are for the when we're in therapy, we're conducting therapy, we're using that, our tools and supplies for therapy, where this is just for the office and this is for our therapist. You know, those conversations are important to have at the onset so they understand your industry and put those things in the right buckets. Because if they don't, it's kind of useless. Like, then Dr. Becca can't log in and know where to rein in, right? Because it's not really, it's all lumped into one expense. Also, how it's set. So that's something to visit, like to consider, like for next year, you might want to talk to your bookkeeper or accountant about how it's set up to help you make better decisions. Another thing is, if you have more than one revenue stream, you might want to talk with your bookkeeper or accountant. Is it possible you could show me how much money my clinic's making versus my home-based therapy? We do that a lot. We assign overhead rates. We find ways to allocate it, and we separate it to show our clients the clinic is making this much and the home-based therapy is making this much. And sometimes one is at a loss and the other one is sustaining it. And that's very important to analyze, because if not, you might be under the impression maybe the home-based therapy is more profitable, but you're just like, oh, well, forget it. We're going to close it. We're going to start doing all clinic. And then you see a loss in revenue. And it's because you never really analyzed those things separately and understood that one was sustaining the other. So all those classifications and how things are broken out, the operational definitions, right? That's important to talk with your accountant and make sure it's in a way that's going to help you make this.
And I think, or I wonder if the same for income, right? So if you have different revenue sources, so let's say you see TRICARE, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and you do school contracts, you want those to be classified separately, not just as one big income lump, so that I can see where is the majority of our income coming from? Where is, you know, where are we doing business? What is the income coming? And maybe if there's hardly any coming from one stream, then maybe I want to get off that panel, or I want to not do that, or I don't know. Like, it's really important to, it's not just one big chunk, in the same way that we wouldn't just say somebody is having a maladaptive behavior. We want to break down, what does it look like? What does it sound like? How big is it? How often is it? And so taking our financial data and breaking it into these smaller, what would you call them, like categories or subparts?
Yeah, classification.
Classification can help you get a better idea about not just your business is financially well or not, or profitable or not, but it's that contextual piece. Under what conditions and in what way is this working or not?
Yeah, the revenue is important. Every time I get a client that has in a one lump sum, the first thing you tell them is I'm going to break it out. We're going to have it by payer. We're going to have it by segment. We have speech therapy. We're going to see it separately, but this doesn't feel good to lump this all into. Because even if you have, let's say you do have it on a cash basis and you're relying on a system, like let's say you send for each and there you can, or AccuPoint, you can see how much you build out to each one. You really don't know how much cash you collected unless you have specific reports generated there that you can rely on. If those are being maintained, then your best bet is just to see, well, where's the cash coming from? What's sustaining on a cash basis?
Absolutely.
Okay, so my last tip for 2020 has to do with tax, right? A lot of you know in 2018, we revised the entire tax law. It affected businesses greatly. And the first year rolled out very late, and you might have not had time to sit back and analyze whether the entity you're in is still the good entity. By entity, I mean, right, S-Corp, LLC, whatever it may be, right? All these different entities, they have different tax consequences. And it's, you know, it's a very, it's not an easy thing to assimilate, but you need to go through several levels. But at some point, maybe when you formed your company, an LLC was the best option, but based on the new tax law and your personal situation, an S-corp might be better now. So you really want to know, it's been 2 years, you have 2 years of tax, and the tax returns you're going to be able to look at, to talk with your GPA, hey, am I still in the right entity? I know the tax law changed, and I want to make sure I'm doing what's best for me from a tax strategy perspective. Also, made a lot of times, a lot of companies, ABA companies, start out as LLCs, a single member LLC, and that's often fine your first year, but if you start generating sufficient income, you might want to consider changing to an S-corp, because they have more tax variable strategy in most cases. I would say most cases, it all depends. Because these entities are flowed through, it depends on your husband's income, on whether you have children, or about whether they're in college. You know, it's a big consideration. But now's the time to sit down with GBA and talk about that. Am I the right entity? If you're a flow-through entity, generally people don't ever choose to be a C-corp because they're subject to double taxation, while the flow-throughs only have one level of taxation, right? And that means that the flow-through entities only get hit with tax one time. The C-corp, the company itself pays tax, which is different than what we discussed, right? And then when they pay the money out to the owners, they then pay tax again, two levels. So most of the time that's not favorable, but if your company is retaining a lot of your earnings because you're using it for investment, you could avoid paying tax on a certain amount that you retain. The IRS allows C-corps to retain money without paying tax. So if you have a flow-through entity and you don't pay out any of the money because you're going to use next year for an investment, you still pay taxes on all that money, whether you take a dime of it or not. So sometimes a C-corp might be a better idea, especially since they lower the tax rates for C-corps substantially. If you have a spouse that's a high earner, you might pay less for the C-corp because their rates are capped at 20%. Now with a new tax law. So that's important. And if you decide to make an election, let's say you are the LLC and you want to do the S-corp, those elections are generally due by March 15th of the current year. So you need to start thinking about that now. How much money did my company make? Would I have paid more or less tax had I made this S-corp election? Yes or no? Okay, let's do it. We know our deadline is March 15th. We're going to get it in, so we get the treatment for 2020.
So again, I want to circle back to the idea that don't wait. Start having these conversations early. Start having these conversations now if you haven't had any of them yet about finishing this year strong and being set up well for next year, so that next year in November 2020, when we're sitting in the same place, you have a better idea about why you're doing what you're doing, that it's very intentional and was planned in advance, right? Those antecedent strategies versus a consequence strategy. And so again, if right now you're thinking, oh my gosh, I haven't done any of this, that's okay. That's why we're doing this call. That's why we're doing this session. So you can start to look at what you might want to start doing today to take steps towards finishing strong and well for this year, and how you can plan to not be in this place next year. Or remember, reinforcement is key too. So if you're listening to Johanna and you're like, okay, so I've been meeting with my CPA quarterly and we've got our bookkeeper and I've got my revenue and my expenses in these different classifications, man, I'm doing great. Cool. Do something great for yourself to celebrate. I mean, both are important, that error correction as well as the reinforcement of kind of managing things or not. Okay. One other thing I wanted to mention, I think it's related somewhat to, so Johanna, you had mentioned LLCs, and I think it's important to talk with your CPA to see what's going to be the best organization tax strategy or just financial strategy. But remember, you also need to talk with an attorney, because those are talking about entity structures, and that is related to the way your business is organized as an entity. And that has to be, so your CPA might be giving you suggestions and you need to talk to an attorney about that, because for example, in some states, a BCBA cannot have an LLC. It has to be a PLLC or a professional limited liability corporation. And so remember that it's important to have that team of professionals that you're working with. So your accountant, your bookkeeper, your CPA who can guide you in the financial piece, and an attorney who can guide you in maybe the employment practices. So your CPA can organize your, you know, your W-2 or 1099, right? Like an employer or contractor. And your attorney might be able to give you more guidance about who should be classified in what way. Or your CPA can help you understand the tax, I don't know the right word, like the taxes required or the tax structure or strategy for the different organizations, and your attorney is going to be able to actually create that structure for you or tell you whether that's permitted or not in your state. So it's important to have a team. There's overlapping scopes of competence, right? Just like with BCBAs and SLPs or OTs and psychologists. And it's never one without the other. It's really an and instead of an or situation. Would you agree, Johanna?
Yeah, that's always really important. I'm glad you brought it up, because usually if somebody calls me to consult on one entity, I always tell them I'm going to give you my suggestion from a tax perspective. You need to consult an attorney to find the legal complications or whatever it may be, right? They deal a lot with asset protection. It has to do a lot with, you know, how your individual life is set up, you know, what your spouse owns, what you have. Asset protection is extremely important, and every state is different. So you want to consult a local attorney to tell you, okay, in this state, this entity is going to better protect your assets. I know you may see a little bit on tax on this one, but I recommend this. And then it's a going effort, right? It's not just one. It's, you need to consider two things, the tax consequences and the legal consequences.
Absolutely. I appreciate that, because remember, it's not the CPA or the accountant or the bookkeeper or the attorney that's on the hook. It's you. It's me as the business owner. It's my responsibility to do my due diligence, to consult with those who I need to in order to ensure that my business is operating lawfully and ethically and what would be well, right? Healthily. I don't know if that's a word. I might have just made that up. I'm not sure. But I want to be thoughtful of time. Are there any last minute tips that you might have, Johanna?
That was my last tip.
Perfect. Perfect. So if people want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to find you?
Well, they can always email me. We have our website, eddieadvisory.com. There they can contact us through a link, or they can email me. It's jmeddie@eddieadvisory.com, or they're always welcome to call our office too. We're in Cooper City, Florida. Our phone number is 954-395-8107.
Perfect. Well, I will be sure to put all that information in the show notes. I'm also going to link the earlier podcast session that Johanna and I did. Was that earlier this year or last year? I think earlier.
I think it was this year, yeah.
Had to have been this year, because we were in the current space that we're in, like the current clinic, not currently, because I'm in my office with, you guys can't see because you're listening, but I've got like stacks of books around me because I'm doing some report writing this morning. And totally off track, but I'm going to link that as well, because Johanna did a really nice introduction to some basic accounting, and maybe even after listening to that, you'll understand why I keep saying CPA and accountant differently, because ever since learning that there's a difference in schooling and sort of knowledge, I've really been thoughtful and intentional about how I'm describing people, because language is powerful. And so I'll put a link there as well. So Johanna, again, I really appreciate that you took the time to share your knowledge and expertise, and I appreciate that you so freely give that away, because not everybody does that, and I think that shows a lot, or gives some insight into one of your values, which is helping others, and I really appreciate that, both personally and professionally. So thank you, Johanna.
Thank you very much.